Ladies and gentlemen, and gender non-binary folks worldwide, welcome back to Appodlatcha. My name's Chuck Cora, joined as always from the River City, Big John Eisner. And I must say, this episode almost didn't happen. It almost didn't happen. John's internet provider, Suddenlink, decided that they weren't going to provide internet today, and so we were under the gun to get this done. And actually, this is an ongoing theme in this episode, as you'll know. Our guest also had internet troubles. Where is that rural broadband, Elon Musk? Where is it?
Yeah, they just really don't. They like to toy with me. I really do think that they know, like, our recording schedule to the point where they just kind of flip it off, and then like maybe 5-10 minutes beforehand, flip it back on. Like, I mean, this is almost a weekly thing now. I mean, it's got, like I said last week, it's gotten so bad that, I mean, we were already paying like $130, and then they're like, it's so bad, we'll just give it to you for $50. Like, I mean, which is, that's something for Suddenlink to give up some money.
It's pretty telling that they can drop that much and still just not provide internet. So I guess from their standpoint, they're not doing much at all anyway. So
yeah. Yeah, what's the difference? 50, 60, whatever. You do, yeah, you.
It's all negligible to them. Well, I mean, it's always been a while since we talked. The world has continued to turn. In that time, sanction crackdowns have hit Russian oligarchs who had their yachts seized. And it was reported that Joe Manchin was seen dumping his bottles of Stolichnaya vodka into the Potomac River, quote, just in case. And a Tennessee congressional candidate's wife claimed during a hearing that Planned Parenthood promoted Pornhub in schools. That is not a joke. That was a real story. Credit the Tennessee Holler. And finally, a woman in Asheville won her appeal with the DMV to have a license plate that says fart on it after it was contested, and she created a nonprofit called Friends of the Asheville Area Recreational Trails. God bless. Bless that woman, but that's sadly not what we're here to talk about today.
Good old fart.
I love it. You can't argue to me that you wouldn't form a nonprofit just so you could have fart on your license plate.
Oh, I trust me, I definitely would. I would form a nonprofit to make up a bunch of stuff on my license plate.
Look, we talked about this guy before. We don't like him, but we do talk about him because he is, at the very least, entertaining, to say the least. Madison Cawthorn, Congressman, Mad Dog 2020, as you'll recall. We've talked about him a lot. He was back in the news, John. I know that you know about it, but for the benefit of our great listeners, why don't we recap? He is known, as you know, for delivering some fiery oratory on the House floor, really being a powerful advocate for North Carolina's 11th district, and this time was no different. No different. He was talking about the United States and their potential involvement in a war in Ukraine, and in doing so, he channeled country music artist Toby Keith, who he called a great philosopher. He said, quote, "As the great philosopher Toby Keith once said, we put a boot in their ass. It's the American way." I'm not entirely sure what he was trying to get across with that. I don't know that he was arguing for a broad-scale American invasion, but I also don't know that he was not.
Also, I just realized something. So he represents the, what, 12th or 11th?
11th. I think it's been redrawn, but...
Well, it just makes me laugh because the movie The Campaign, have you ever seen that?
Uh-huh.
That's the 14th district of North Carolina. And obviously it's like, I think that one's a fictional district, but I'm pretty sure that they were just like, man, we got this guy coming named Madison that we could write this movie. I mean, what would he have been? It's 2012. He's what, like 28 or something?
Madison Cawthorn was? No, he would have been like 12.
No, I meant like, how old is he now?
Oh.
Why would I think he's 28 in 2012?
I don't know. I don't know your life.
I meant like, how old is he now?
Oh, yeah. I think he's like 27, 28 maybe.
Also, what happened to that? In August 2020, during his campaign for Congress, several women accused him of sexually aggressive behavior, sexual misconduct, and sexual assault. Numerous former classmates support allegations. Where did that go? Why did that just get swept under the rug?
A coronavirus.
dude.
Everything is coronavirus when it comes to that.
Insane.
No, you're right, though. You're right. You're right. It's terrible. I mean, there is no such thing as accountability anymore. I do want to say, I wanted to examine this man's great philosophy. I mean, if we're talking about sticking a boot in the ass American way, obviously we've actually mentioned before Toby Keith and how he wrote a Red Solo Cup, which I'm assuming Madison Cawthorn lumped into his great philosophy. And I wanted to play a game with you. I wanted to, I've got four different lyrics, and one of them is not Toby Keith's. The other three are, you have to guess which one isn't. And I guess to reframe this, you have to guess which one is not a great work of philosophy, according to Mad Dog. All right, so the first one, here goes. We ain't east, we ain't west, we ain't left, we ain't right. We ain't black, we ain't white, we just came here to drink.
Okay.
All right, so that's the first one. The second one.
That's definitely a lyric.
The second one. Grandpappy told my pappy, back in my day, son, a man had to answer for the wicked that he'd done. Take all the rope in Texas, find an old tree, and round all them bad boys up and hang them high in the street.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, it's about lynching. It's about lynching. So so I guess that one's out, but that's number two. Number three is Big Dog Daddy. Big Dog Daddy. Just Big Dog Daddy. Big Dog Daddy. Got miles screaming from here to Cincinnati. Try to compete with this Big Dog Daddy. That's number three. And the last one. Every woman that I meet is a headache. Spend my money and it ends in a heartbreak. See no reason to repeat any mistakes. I'm better off beaten off.
There's no way the last one's real.
I got you on that one. So that's your answer. Number four.
Yeah, that loss was not real.
Oh, well... It is not real in the sense it's not a Toby Keith lyric. That's right. It is a Willie Walker Jr. lyric, I should say.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but Big Dog Daddy, Big Dog Daddy, just a Big Dog Daddy is a Toby Keith lyric.
I believe that. Yes. I believe. But and honestly, if you would have stopped right before the beaten off part, then I would have been like, ah, nope, all four are.
Well,
but he's too godlike to talk about beating off.
Well, I got to make my games more difficult, I guess, because that was too easy. But
I've been training.
Big Dog Daddy, I think, is what he should have quoted on the house floor. He should have said, in the words of Toby Keith, Big Dog Daddy, Big Dog Daddy, try to compete with this Big Dog Daddy. America is the Big Dog Daddy.
I'm pretty sure that's what he calls Donald Trump. Big Dog Daddy.
And Russia's got to let the big dog eat. Yeah, he does call him. He just calls him Daddy, really. I mean, God bless both of them. I think the more Toby Keith you quote on the house floor, the better, the more free we are as a society.
That's why I didn't win. I didn't quote enough Toby Keith.
Nope, you didn't. You fucked up. Campaign rule number one. But that's all we've got for that. Let's move on. We got some announcements today. We are recording a new episode for our Patreon bonus series. So if you're at the $10 tier and above, you can check that out. We're going to be doing an interview with Liz Pavlovich about her Appalachian cryptid artwork, how she got into that. It'll be really, really cool. I'm very much looking forward to it. We've also got some community interviews that we're uploading for all of our Patreon members. John, why don't you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's a new thing that we're doing. We started with a good friend of the show, Danny, who we met through Patreon, obviously. We got to know Danny a little bit more in terms of, you know, his relationship to Appalachia, his background, all of those sorts of things. So that's going to be coming out on Patreon. If you're a Patreon member, remember, I mean, we could be picking you next. So just be ready. Okay.
Yeah.
But also, we won't force you. Don't worry.
It's your time. Called up to the majors.
Yeah. So if you get called up, you got to answer. But yeah, and then we're also doing the, you know, favorite review, where if you leave a review on our Apple podcast page, it has to be 5 stars and has to be written because we can't see it otherwise.
Truth.
We'll pick a winner every week. And Chuck, I don't know, I guess people weren't listening last week because we didn't get any new reviews. Okay. The last thing I want to announce, Chuck, is that we, have been discussing this for a while. Now that that 2022 is here, we want to get pretty much as many politicians on the show as possible. However, we also know how some people are running in very small areas that not all of our listenership will be from. So we think a great way to still have everyone on is to do roundtables and to essentially have a bunch of politicians, I say a bunch, but I'm talking like 3, 4, or 5, come on at one time. And we do a roundtable where it's not really a debate or anything, but we'll pose questions to each of them. And we'll control the, the dialogue and where everything goes. And hopefully it'll allow people to get a glimpse into what these candidates stand for. We're going to start with the great state of Alabama. So I just sent that tweet out. So if you're a politician
who's
interested in, and War Eagle, don't forget War Eagle.
War Eagle, War Damn Eagle. That's right. And you know what? Go Alabama, Birmingham. Why not?
Yeah, do it all. If you are a politician who's interested in coming on and you're from Alabama or really any of the states, because we'll start planning these out, email us at info@appodlatcha.com. Let us know. And the last thing I want to announce is something that we've been working on, and that is that we're going to create an area of our website that essentially allows people to write articles or write things about Appalachia, and we'll upload them to it. It'll be, you know, pretty cool little section that allows people to have the ability to, you know, to voice their opinions or write about different stuff that's going on. That will take some time to get put into place, but I want to get the ball rolling there. So if people have some ideas, they can email us again at info@appodlatcha.com.
Damn straight. I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of balls rolling, that was something that happened a lot when I played soccer in high school. By the way, I sucked at it, never made varsity. I got a lifelong injury from it. A fucked up knee. What do I use to help it? Some great CBD balm from Cornbread Hemp. Ha-ha, there you go. Why did I say that? Because I was using it today because my knee is fucked. I'll re-record that part because I don't want to say fuck twice in a row. But Cornbread Hemp, a great sponsor of ours. They have been a sponsor for a long time. We really appreciate them. Something that we've really enjoyed, John, is the gummies. They have CBD gummies. You can get a lower dose of them with 1 milligram of THC, or you can get a higher dose of 2 milligrams of THC per gummy. It really packs a punch. It really, John, if you're watching this on YouTube, John is holding them up to his face. It could be a great accent to your ears as well as a great CBD gummy treat. They really help. They help me sleep. They kind of help tone down the anxiety. And like I said, they pack a little bit of a punch. They got 2 milligrams of THC in some of them. So, you know, get that stuff. It's really good. We got a promo code. John's always great at telling you what it is, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Look, these gummies, out of this world good. They taste good, which that should blow your mind in the first place. If these are CBD gummies that actually taste good, I mean, we should be thanking the high heavens anyway, but you don't even have to thank the high heavens. You just have to thank our friend Jim over at Cornbread Hemp. But again, ooh, please don't tell Jim that we're still running this deal, because we're really not sure if we're supposed to. But anyway, I want you to go over to cornbreadhemp.com. I want you to add everything to the cart that you want. Take a look at that price. See it in your mind. And then go down to the promo code section and type in Appodlatcha, APPODLACHIA. Take 25% right off the top.
Get it out of there. Get it out.
Get out of there, 25%. And you're going to get that discount right now at cornbreadhemp.com. Go over there, Appodlatcha in the promo code section, and make sure that you screenshot your order and hashtag don't tell Jim on Twitter, okay? Mm-hmm. We want Jim to know, but we also want to know that you've made a purchase, because we want to see how that's been going on. And we use these things ourselves. Like Chuck said, I had these up next to my head just a minute ago.
Mine right here.
Exactly. It's something that we depend on now. And if you haven't noticed, we don't really have any other advertisements on this show, and it's because we only advertise things that we believe in, and this is, you know, very much one of them. The other thing that we believe in, which I think sometimes we forget to mention, Chuck, is Starry Eyed Media. We can't forget to mention them either.
Goddamn right.
Look, they made our website, so go over to appodlatcha.com, the same website that I just told you that we're going to start doing some pretty fun community-like things on. Go check it out, and then go over to Starry Eyed Media and check them out, too, because I'm telling you, they're producing some great stuff over there, Chuck.
Yeah, we thank Starry Eyed Media for building our website and attending sports. We thank Cornbread Hemp for sponsoring this show. And for being just such great partners. You know, they're a family-owned company from Kentucky, not corporate-funded, funded by the people like you, so we really appreciate it. And you all have been so great at supporting them through our promo code. We hope you continue to do that, and we appreciate it. But with that being said, why don't we move on to our interview today? We got a good one, a bit of a different one, I would say. Maybe a little bit of a change-up, to throw in a baseball term that I don't understand here. You remember we had Space Gal on. She was a science communicator. Well, we've got another science communicator on today, John Elena Wood, who is a sustainability scientist and climate communicator with a background in stormwater and solid waste management in both the public and private sectors. She is from the great state of Tennessee, Johnson City. Holds a degree in sustainability and geography from the University of Tennessee, go Vols, and lives in the Appalachian Mountains, like I said, of Johnson City. She's garnered a huge TikTok following of over 250,000 followers because she helps people through their eco-anxiety and channeling climate angst into positive action. We talked to her today about her work doing that. When I say eco-anxiety, I mean people have anxiety about the future of our world. Climate change is bearing down on us, and it seems like we're doomed. Elena's argument is, we're not necessarily doomed yet. And I like that.
A little bit of hope.
A little bit.
This is another one of those interviews. I know I've said this before, but I like having interviews where honestly I know literally nothing about the topic. And to be honest, I didn't know much about the person until we, you know, booked the interview. It's one of those things that, like, it was a cool way to learn about the person and about the things that they study, look at, and talk about. It really opened up my eyes, I'll tell you that much, because, and you'll hear it in the interview, you know, I'm kind of one of those people who, I'm willing to make some changes, but I'm also, I'm not going to pretend like I'm some environmental, you know, saint. I'm just not going
to. Elena's a great example of someone who is trying to flip the narrative a little bit and push back against this, I don't know, like climate nihilism, cynicism in general that's so hot on social media, which we're probably all guilty of to some extent, and really trying to channel it into a, here's what you can actually do, and here's what you should do to help your current situation. I like it a lot. I think y'all will too. So let's kick it over to our interview. Well, Elena, thanks so much for joining us and for problem solving through some of the internet issues with us today. Really appreciate that. I wanted to kick things off by getting a little bit more about your background. How did you get started in sustainability sciences in general?
So in high school, I got involved with a local chapter of Keep America Beautiful, which is an environmental organization that does litter cleanups like all over the United States. And I got introduced to composting through that organization. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. But going into college, I thought I was going to just do water quality, which I still do water quality work. But I happened to get a job at UT with their recycling department. And all of, you know, all, it was like all the cool people in the sustainability program worked for the recycling department. So I was like, awesome. I'm a cool person now. But I quite literally fell in love with trash. Working there, I drove trash trucks, recycling trucks, compost trucks. I worked every single UT football game picking up litter and waste from tailgaters, which was incredible how much trash UT produces. But then how little of it goes to landfill, honestly.
Yeah, I remember when I was still in Nashville in public affairs, we briefly worked on an issue involving siting a new landfill in Middle Tennessee, and it's fascinating but also terrifying what happens to all of our trash and just the lack of plans that were in place, at least at the time, for a new landfill, because the current one was filling up. It was kind of alarming, to be honest.
Oh, and there still isn't. Middle Tennessee is running into a major problem with one of their biggest landfills is closing, and yep, they're thinking about trash down the river.
Oh god, yeah, I think that was, what is it, dubbed Mount Trashmore or something, I want to say. It's awful.
Every landfill I think I've ever worked with has had some kind of moniker like that. Trash Mountain, Mount Trashmore, the biggest place in the city.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I kind of want to shift into, I think, I guess would be best described as your niche area, which is eco-anxiety, and I will let you explain what that is, but I'm curious how you got involved in that and how you made a transition to climate communications full time, because eco-anxiety is something that I think is such a huge issue, especially for millennials and Gen Zers in this world.
Yeah, it is. Over half of young people experience eco-anxiety to some extent. And eco-anxiety is essentially feeling anxious or scared or nervous about climate change, or in particular, feeling those feelings for the future because of climate change. And I feel like, I mean, I have eco-anxiety. I think anyone who works in the environmental sector probably has it to some extent. But how I got into talking about eco-anxiety online was actually because of Bo Burnham, the comedian.
Interesting.
The weirdest way to go about it. But so he had a Netflix film that came out last summer, and one of the songs in his movie talks about like feelings of hopelessness and like, oh, the oceans are rising, it's too late, things like that. And for him, it was a very, I think, cathartic piece. But TikTok took that as, hey, let's use this little clip to spread misinformation about climate change. And I was getting frustrated that people were spreading like, hey, it's too late, we're all going to run out of food or water, you know, by like 2028 or some crazy date. And so I started debunking it. One, because it was frustrating for me to see. And two, because I was reading the comments where people were freaking out and they didn't realize they had eco-anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let's like put a name to what these people are feeling and also try to help that, which is debunking it and saying, yeah, no, it's not too late to solve the climate crisis. Things are bad, but they're not that bad.
So you don't think it's gone too far?
Not too far. I mean, it's getting worse by the day, but the science still says we can fix it. It's not too late to mitigate the worst impacts of climate change. Okay. And honestly, even if we don't fix things quick enough, there will still always be things to fix. That's what I keep telling, I think, people online, is it's never going to be too late to do something. We can always make it better. It just may not be the best.
What's your take on the, I know this off subject, but it got me thinking as you were talking, there seems to be this conception on the internet, or even I hear it at like work and stuff, where people essentially say, you know, why would I make changes in my daily life when, you know, like whatever company is polluting or causing all of these issues? But obviously, you've talked a little bit about kind of the micro level of things. What do you say to those people who are like, I'm not going to make changes myself because of, you know, X company or something else that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I get that all the time, even from like friends and family.
Right.
And like, yeah, absolutely, governments and corporations have caused way more damage than you and I ever could. But at the end of the day, it's people like us who are going to force those governments and companies to change, and we got to start somewhere. And it doesn't mean you need to be, you know, give up every single piece of plastic or never eat an animal product ever again. Like, you can if you want. Mm-hmm. But for most people, that's really unattainable. And so I just like tell people to do their best. And honestly, the best thing they can do, other than like, you know, live more sustainably, is to get involved with your local communities to try to get them to enact small changes. So if you can force, you know, our local communities to change, that's less we as individuals have to, you know, quote unquote, give up.
I'm kind of curious. I think it was recently that you took a trip overseas and were in, I think, like Scotland and Ireland. I'm wondering how other countries, or maybe even other parts of our country, compare when it comes to sustainability and focusing on climate change. How does that compare to where you live in Johnson City, which is a beautiful part of Appalachia? I love Johnson City, but Tennessee is not exactly known as the most progressive state when it comes to things like climate issues.
It was night and day. I mean, where I was in Scotland was, I think, more sustainable than the majority of the country. But everywhere you went, there was renewable energy. You could see wind turbines. You could see solar panels. There was electric public transportation. There was recycling and composting everywhere. There was very little, like, single-use plastic. And most of the cars I saw were either really fuel efficient gasoline ones or hybrid or electric. And in fact, I rented a car in Scotland and I was, I just rented it. I had no idea what I was getting. And they gave us a plug-in hybrid. It was just, cool. you didn't have to pay anything extra for it. It also was a self-driving car. Fun, considering driving on the other side of the road is a little different. But it, you know, Scotland and Ireland both are very similar geographically to Appalachia. So it was interesting to see the mountains, and they look similar, just without trees almost. And then being like, well, this city looks like Johnson City, but it's not, Johnson City isn't really sustainable at all. Heck, we can't even recycle steel cans in Johnson City.
Really? Why is that? That's bizarre.
That's a good question. And when I used to be an environmental planner, I'd try to get to the bottom of that because every other community recycles it. I was never given a good answer.
It seems like there's a lot of things that locally we're doing that are kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, but that we could be doing big things better. In your community in Johnson City, what do you think are some things that could be done at maybe a local level to improve the overall climate or just to like make the city more sustainable?
Well, obviously improving recycling, which there's a lot of people working behind the scenes on that right now. I used to be one of them, and changes are coming for recycling. I also would love to see city curbside composting. We're very lucky in Johnson City to have a private company that we can pay to come and pick up our compost, but they don't service everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I would just love to see more public transportation. Like, I live downtown and I'm a 5-minute walk to the bus stop, but it could take me an entire day to run errands. Whereas if I drove my own car, it could take me like an hour. We have really inefficient public transportation here. And then finally, and this problem is throughout Tennessee and throughout a lot of Appalachia, is we can't easily, if we put like solar power on our house, we can't easily sell it back onto the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of other EVA prevents most like residents from doing that. So if they could change that, I think a lot more people would be keen to put solar on their houses.
Yeah, West Virginia is the same way. They have a bunch of rules that essentially only allow you to get credits and not to actually sell it and make money off of it. It's very regressive when it comes to that. And that's why a lot of people here don't do it. One, that. And two, solar panels are not the cheapest thing in the entire world. What do you tell people who, so Johnson City, obviously, Tennessee, great spot. Not the smallest place in the world. What do you tell people who live in the, very rural area that may not have a lot of resources, attached to their city or their town? How do you tell them, ways to get started or ways that they could help?
So when it comes to people who live, in more rural areas than even Johnson City, I always tell them not to freak out. They're not producing as much emissions waste as even people in Johnson City are. And at the end of the day, those communities need to focus on just making sure their infrastructure is safe. And if their infrastructure is safe, like their water, sewer, roads, even, internet, then after that, they can focus on maybe being more sustainable or just upgrading their infrastructure in a way that's sustainable as is. And for that, again, it's just getting involved in your local community, getting involved in your county, and pushing for those communities really to apply for grants. I mean, I used to work for the government. I understand how funding works, and communities in Appalachia are going to need a lot of help to get sustainable. Like, we used to fight Nashville for funding. little old Johnson City. So Nashville would always get the big funding and Johnson City would get nothing. Mm. So I understand like how like Mountain City out in the corner of like Virginia, North Carolina, and Tennessee, mm-hmm. how little they get down the road. But at the end of the day, I'm like, y'all just focus on making sure your water and sewer, everything is safe and sustainable.
That's a big issue. The last job I had before becoming an attorney was doing those types of grants and loans and all of that through the federal government and helping communities do that. And that's one of the biggest things I think people are facing, which I think worries me for the future a little bit. Maybe it's a little eco-anxiety, but they're going into these little communities are going into so much debt because the grants only cover so much when it comes to sustainability that I worry that it's going to almost take precedent trying to pay these off rather than become sustainable. It's almost like an uphill battle even when they change things. So I'll be interested to see what comes of that when we, you know, the smaller cities kind of moving forward.
Me too. And I mean, I have that exact concern because I've seen the state of the infrastructure in the communities near me. And I think they're just always going to be playing catch up unless they get a lot more resources.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that both of you made. I saw that play out in Hamilton County, Tennessee, where the small community of East Ridge is, and they never get the same kind of money that Chattanooga does. I have some theories about how consolidating government might help that, but I'm not going to get into that right now. What I do want to do is shift a little bit, because I want to talk to you about your TikTok, which is really impressive. I think you've really built a platform there where you talk about eco-anxiety. I think you've carved out a voice for yourself there. Obviously, you have over 250,000 followers. You've got a book deal coming along. I'm curious what you hear from people about eco-anxiety. What are the things that people are bringing up that they're worried about, that they're scared about? What are the most common things that you hear?
So I hear quite a few different things, but they all fall under a few themes. One is that they just don't think that governments and corporations are going to make changes enough. They're like, yeah, I understand you're saying the science says it's not too late, but I see how governments work and I, you know, I'm really anxious and nervous that we're not going to, you know, force politicians to make changes. And then I also see people saying, yeah, are we going to just, the world just going to burst into flames? Are we all going to become like refugees? I hear a lot of people are like, they ask, should I move? I live in this place. Should I move? Should I have a career? They're just worried that the world's going to be in turmoil one way or another. And it's clearly impacting their mental health and it's starting to impact their daily life. I've been hearing from a lot more people saying that they're worried. They're like, should I even go to college? Should I pursue a career? Should I start a family? I'm like, oh no, you should, you know, I think you should rightfully be worried about climate change. It's a crisis. It's an emergency, but I don't want it to be impacting people to the point that they're thinking about changing, you know, they're like long-term goals because of it.
Yeah. I think the point you mentioned, I think the point that you alluded to about family planning is something that I hear the most. I think, and there's a certain level of cynicism to it, but there's a lot of people who are rethinking having families, having kids, because, you know, the world's on fire. Do I want to really be bringing up a family in a world that might be quote unquote doomed? I don't know that everybody approaches it with quite that level of severity, but it is something that I think a lot of people think about, including myself. And it's hard not to when you see headlines like the one that came out recently about, I think it was the IPCC report saying that we've reached an irreversible point in climate change. Like we've done so much damage that you can't reverse that damage. So it's hard to see that and have a positive outlook. I'm wondering what your response is to something like that.
So, well, one of those reports is coming out on Monday. Actually, it's part two of
perfect timely.
And I was a reviewer on that report. Actually, I got to make, you know, comments and edits to it. So I know exactly what's going to be said in the report. What happens is scientists almost say one thing, which is in this report, especially, it's just narrowing in on the language of like, yes, the climate crisis is real. It's primarily caused by fossil fuels. It's caused a lot of damage, particularly to people in the global south and those who live in like coastal communities or in the desert. And then it's like, we need to do something about it now. Like, we've hit some of those irreversible tipping points, but we haven't hit all of them. And at the end of the day, we are still projected at this point to hit a lot of bad tipping points, but we can still make changes in the coming years to prevent us from getting to that point. Like, there's still time to change the trajectory of warming. So how I respond to videos like that, because the last time this report came out was, I think it was in August of last year.
Mm-hmm.
There was just misinformation everywhere. And a lot of it was from well-intentioned people. They didn't mean to spread misinformation. They wanted to get people involved in climate activism. They didn't know that they were spreading misinformation, or the way they were going about it was causing people harm. So every time I get tagged in one of those videos, which is, I feel like, almost every day at this point, I watch the video, read the comments, and if it's bad enough that, you know, I can't fix it in a few comments, I reach out to the creator and I'm like, hey, do you know that what you spread is misinformation? Like, here's some articles you should read, you know, showing this isn't actually the case, and maybe you should take this video down, or like remake the video, or redact, you know, do something. And if they don't do any of that, then I have to make the video debunking it, which is often, because unfortunately, I think a lot of people just like when they go viral.
Yep.
And I mean, I don't know. I don't really like going viral anymore, because that just means you get hate comments.
Understandable. Yeah.
And I guess the fun and excitement in going viral, and that people are like, oh, well, I don't, what I say, you know, I can't control how people react to my videos, which I understand. But also, if you're purposely spreading misinformation, it's a little different.
Yeah, we see it all the time. I mean, people just do whatever for a like or share or follow or whatever. So they'll, you know, refuse to take things down that are vastly untrue. One thing I have to get this off my chest is I hate paper straws. So I just want to put that out there into the world about, you know, this eco movement. I just want to say that I'll do everything else. But paper straws, I can't do it. I just can't do it, guys.
I hate you.
Yeah.
But this is me. I hate paper straws.
They're gross. They're so gross. They just dissolve. They get in your drink. It's gross. And I know that there are some maniacs out there listening now saying, John, why don't you just not use a straw? Well, you're a psycho. So
I'm just going to jump in and say I don't use straws, so happy to be the only psycho on this call.
Psycho, you psychopath. This will be the moment where I'm like, yeah, that's how I knew he was a sociopath. It all started in that conversation where you say, don't use straws.
If it took you this long, that's on you.
Well, I had plenty of doubt until today. one thing that I think maybe hurts the movement, I know I'm kind of being negative, but I these are growing up where I grew up, I'm always skeptical of things that will happen when it comes to environmental movements, because I mean, to be frank, nothing has happened like in my neck of the woods. It's only continued to get worse, which I think is what another thing that worries me for the future is. I think there are so many people who are just like so defeated. I mean, do you come across a lot of defeated people with, you know, when you're trying to talk to them about, like, for instance, Chuck and I grew up in Parkersburg, which is home of DuPont, which, you know, continually poisoned our water while we grew up. And they're still a company to this day. I think they poison like 90% of all people, 98% of all people with Teflon or whatever. So, I mean, do you meet a bunch of defeated people when it comes to this?
Absolutely. All the time. And actually, a lot of them follow me. I do it to humble me. Honestly, I mean, it's important people understand that environmental injustice still happens everywhere. And it's so prevalent in Appalachia, and I don't think we talk about it enough. I mean, DuPont, where y'all are from, like Eastman and like ORNL, and we have nuclear fuel services, like, you know, we're full of pollution. And it can, I mean, it is infuriating to see that these companies still have not truly had to pay for the damage they've caused. But to those who are defeated, I'm like, you know what, take a break. That's fine that you're defeated. I understand. Other people aren't defeated, and don't try to bring them down. If there are people who still have momentum, don't, you know, don't take that away from them, because we need more climate activists. We need more people holding big polluters accountable. And it's, I mean, I get defeated, I feel like, once a month, and I have to take a break. It's tough work.
That makes sense. That's kind of where I think I am on this. I will not pretend to be like some huge activist. I always tip my cap to people who are. I'm kind of the person, I sit on the sideline when it comes to this. Like, I'll, you know, my wife is vegan. She's very, and you know, she focuses more on it. Me, I still, I think I'm in the defeated camp, where I'm just like, look, it's just going to continue to happen. But also I'm rooting for the people who are actively working on it. It's just hard for me to gain momentum myself. Chuck, I don't know how you feel on that.
I'm not as defeated, but I do think, as someone who works every day with elected people, it is hard not to be pessimistic with the government in action, or just like the lack of adequate action, I think. And there's always a lot of talk, especially from Democrats. And, you know, part of that is because they don't have enough power. Part of that is because they don't use it properly. But it is kind of, it is difficult, because it seems like the world, not just America, but the world has this broad consensus about climate change. And we have so many like small, but yet super powerful forces preventing us from doing a lot in our government. And I think that's the frustrating part, at least on my end.
Oh, it is absolutely frustrating. I mean, I used to work for the government and was also working with elected officials every single day. And I really couldn't discuss climate change with them. I was an environmental planner by trade, and I could discuss, you know, environmental pollution, or like, hey, this is going to save you money. Or, hey, you have to do this. The law says you have to do this. But I still couldn't really talk to them about climate change. It was almost, it's still like a taboo word here, which is baffling, because we're experiencing it. I mean, Johnson City is flooding like crazy right now.
Oh.
Because we've had just storms come through. From, I think, the moment I started taking sustainability courses in college, it was always, here's how you talk to people about it. And by people, it was like, here's how you talk to elected officials in Appalachia. And if you go about it in a way that say, this is going to make you or save you money. Yep. That's, you know, if that's how you convince them at this point, I'm fine with that.
I totally agree. Well, Elena, thank you so much for coming on the show. It is always a treat to have a Tennessean on the show. We don't have them as often as we should, and I love Tennessee. I miss it so dearly, so I'm very grateful for you for coming on the show. My last question for you is, where can people find out more about you? And I also saw that you signed a book deal recently, and if there's anything you can share about that, I'm sure we'd love to hear.
Yeah, so I just signed a contract with a literary agency to write a book on eco-anxiety, and in particular, how to turn your eco-anxiety into action. So how to take those feelings of nervousness and sadness and anger about climate change, deal with that, and then use that to give you momentum to be a climate activist. And, you know, it's still in the very early development phases. I have no idea when it's going to be published, but it will be someday.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's still baffling to me that I will have to write a book. But people can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and I have a website called thegarbagequeen.com.
Well, Elena, thank you so much. I really, again, appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, and I appreciate what you do. I think that fighting climate disinformation and helping to alleviate eco-anxiety is extremely important and will only become more important as time progresses.
Oh, thank you all very much for having me on. I have been listening to your podcast for a while, so this is, like, incredible to me. I've done so many big press interviews, but to get to do one with you all is awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. This was really cool.
Glad we could do it. What if some days I'll have enough?
And what if one day I'll see it all? All right, that was our interview with Elena. You can check her out with all the links in our show notes. And like she mentioned in our interview, that she's going to be publishing a book soon. We'll have more information about that when it becomes available. And we hope you enjoyed. But moving on to the last segment of the show, the beef segment. If you've been with us before, you know what it's about. If you don't, get ready, because it's a big deal, honestly. It's the one thing that has been with this show, aside from the two of us, for every episode. They call him the Toby Keith of beef. He will fill up your red Solo cup with a full helping of truth and serve it to you at the party free of charge. And if you've ever been to a party in Morgantown, you know that's a big deal. You don't get into anywhere without paying the drink cup fee, ladies, gentlemen, gender, non-binary folks worldwide. Beef with Big John.
If you bother by heat, back up off the grill. My boy Big John's finna fix you up a meal. Yeah, you brought the rules, that's a big deal. Got your mouth full, but it don't matter still. Y'all want some beef with Big John, but at the same time, don't you beef with Big John. Trying to be the man, but you sweet when it's time. Open up wide and it'll leave till it's gone. Eat your beef with Big John. Eat your beef with Big John.
Another great introduction, Chuck. Really is.
Really look, I don't know how you do it. Really work hard.
Way better than I can come up with, even for myself. So I do appreciate that. I was going to talk about what's going on over in Athens, Ohio, but we're going to actually talk about that over on Patreon, patreon.com/iPodLatchet. Go check it out. And, you know, kind of do a breakdown and just talk about some random stuff that we've seen across the years in relation to that. However, I just want to talk real quick. You're going to notice over the next 2 weeks that I'm going to take a little mental health break, as I like to call it. It's just one of those things, everything kind of adding up. You just kind of need to step away every once in a while. And Chuck is cool enough to let me just take a little sabbatical, just a 2 week thing.
Junk it, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason I'm doing this beef is because I see a lot of people, and I guess it's not like me beefing with someone, it's me giving advice, is just to let people know, like, you can take a break. You really can. Like, if something's bothering you, if you're going through a tough time, it's okay to say, I just need a break. And it's one of those things that, honestly, is probably going to save you a lot of time, you know, messing with stuff in the future, or even kind of like feeling bad all the time. So that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to take just a little break. You'll still hear me in one of the interviews coming up, but I probably won't do any of the intro stuff, and I'll probably not do a beef on them either. It's just, like I said, to take a little break, a little breather, come back fresh. And I want to make sure that, I'm on top of my game for the listeners, Chuck. So I think this is a good time for me to do that. Take a little break, come back. And again, this is less of a beef and more of a, if you're bothered by something or whatever, if you need a break, you should tell someone. Tell someone, take a break. They'll probably help you out, just like Chuck's helped me out. So, again, don't worry if I'm not here, because I'll be back. Don't worry. And that's it. I'm going to keep it short, Chuck. That's all I'm going to do.
Short, sweet, to the point. That's how we like to see it. That's a good way to put it. We'll be back. John will be back. He's not going anywhere. Everybody needs a break every now and then. Shit's hard out there. Just don't be too hard on yourself. That's a good beef? Question mark.
Well, it's just one of those things. I think it's kind of like an internal beef, you know? It's one of those things you got to look at yourself and go, okay, you know, I need a break. Something's not right, you know, whatever. But I guess it's just a way for me to say, you know, even we need a break sometimes, Chuck.
Even us beefy, powerful men in the media podcast circuit, sometimes even we need to admit that we're human.
even, yeah, just the warriors that we are, we still need a break.
Yes, these microphone warriors. And for those of you who have not been able to detect my sarcasm, that was indeed sarcasm. I was not claiming that we are media elite.
Oh, God, no.
No. Lord, no.
We're not rich enough to be elite anything.
Fuck no. No. God, no. We're never going to be.
That would be cool, though.
I would be an elite. I'd be an elite.
Yeah, for the money, I'd do it.
I'd fuck with that for sure. Absolutely.
I'd be a gemstone.
Oh, yeah. I'd even be an Uncle Baby Billy. I mean, why not?
I mean, Baby Billy's living better than I am.
Fuck yeah, man. I mean, he got rid of a kid, but, you know, that happens.
Well, you know, I mean, actually, yeah, he's pretty much like my dad.
He's a B. There you go. There you go.
Maybe that, yeah. Like, yeah. All right, Baby Billy.
Well, I mean, wasn't his son, when he reunited with him, married to a to lawyer? Attorney. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Well, we'll close it out with that. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more on Podlatcha. Bada boom, bada bye.